Baby Driver is one of those propulsive movies that start out with an explosive car chase and never let up from there. It has an all-star cast that includes Kevin Spacey, John Hamm, Jamie Foxx, and Ansel Elgort as the getaway driver of the title. Edgar Wright is the man behind it all. He directed and wrote it. The film opens this Friday, and I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to speak with Edgar Wright before it opens. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's actually open today. It comes out on a Wednesday, which is unusual, but it is actually out right now.
And where is it opening?
All over the place.
Theaters all over town, as they say.
North America and the UK and Ireland.
And I forgot to mention the film's driving soundtrack. We opened with one of the key songs featured in it. What came first, the music or the character Baby?
Essentially the music. I mean, the truth of it is that when I was 21 years old, I was listening to the first track that's in the movie, which is by a band called the John Spencer Blues Explosion. And I couldn't, I guess I just associate visuals with music because I couldn't listen to that track without imagining this car chase. And I didn't really know what it was or what the film was, but this is also before I'm a film director, so I can't not listen to this song without thinking of this car chase. So at some point I'm thinking there's got to be a story in a movie to go with this, like this vision. And I guess then that became the idea of, well, what if the getaway driver in that bank robbery is listening to the song, and what if then you have a character who is driven by music himself and is essentially soundtracking his own life
to the point where he can't actually even start unless the song starts at its beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like that sometimes.
There was a time when a lot of the new directors came from out of the music video scene and then started directing feature films. You seem to be doing it backward.
Yeah, it's funny. I probably in my time done about 10 music videos, and I always wanted to do more, but I got more of my breakthrough, like TV is kind of how I started, and then into films. But I love musical sequences, and I loved the music videos that I did. And I guess the music video industry isn't quite what it was like 10, 15 years ago, or, you know, longer. So it's nice to sort of come up with an idea for a movie where you can sort of make it the whole thing music-centric.
Many of our listeners will know you from the film Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End, which you made with frequent collaborators Simon Pegg, Neera Park, and Nick Frost. Could we see a connection between them and this film? And how important was music for you when you're making those films?
Well, Neera Park is still on board with this one because she's produced all of my movies, and I've worked with her since I did TV like 18 years ago. Nick and Simon are not involved in this one. Huh. But I think there is a similarity in terms of the other movies. When we would write those movies, Shaun and Hot Fuzz and The World's End, myself and Simon would listen to music whilst we were writing. We would use music to get inspired. And it would usually be, you know, I think one of the things that sort of the advent of like iTunes or like music on your laptop is just being able to do endless playlists. So I always have a thing is if I'm writing, I can write to score and instrumentals and even dance music. But if it has lyrics in it, then I get very distracted. So you start making very specific playlists for writing.
In fact, recently we had an author on who provided a playlist in the back of her book for each chapter.
Oh, yeah.
The music to listen to while you're reading that chapter.
Yeah.
Do you see, is there a similar sensibility in your films, whether they're British or American? Because this film is an American film.
Yeah. I mean, I've made another movie in Canada, which was set in Canada. This movie is my first U.S. set to movie. So I think I wrote the script I wanted to write, but then one of the things that I did as a way of sort of authenticating it was that when I was writing, I interviewed a lot of ex-cons in the United States. And because I thought, well, as a, you know, English middle-class kid, if I'm going to write an American crime film, the only way to kind of make this feel real is to speak to the real guys. So that was something that I did during the writing, which ended up being an extraordinary experience. And one of those ex-cons, an ex-bank robber, who himself is a writer now, he became the script consultant on the movie and then also did a cameo, not as a bank robber.
Did he inspire any of the characters?
Where he inspired bits of dialogue. I think the thing that's interesting is that I could come up with a completely fictitious story and these kind of characters that I'd had in my head. But then you talk to somebody who's either done those jobs or been in prison with lots of other, like, sort of criminals, and there's just immediate... Anything that you mention, he's either done it or he knows somebody else that has. And then there's bits of detail that are like gold dust in terms of the process or like the actual people themselves or, you know, the kind of the front that they're putting on or some of their own ideologies in terms of how they work that just, you know, it's like sort of just colouring in your script. It's like, I have this idea, I know what the bare bones of these scenes are, I know who these people are, and all of this stuff in interviews is just gold, and you can sometimes take things that they've said and put them straight into the script.
Your title, Baby Driver, describes your main character here.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a cipher, almost like he's always behind his glasses with earbuds on. Is he hiding from others or from himself?
I think a bit of both. I think the reason that he wears the sunglasses and the headphones is that he's creating his bubble around him, because I think at the start of the movie, and he's very young, he's 20 in the movie, and he's working with these more experienced, kind of grizzled, more cynical bank robbers. And I think one of the things is that the music and even the sunglasses, he is adopting this see no evil, hear no evil approach, where I think he's fooling himself that he is not one of the gang, that he's just the driver, and that he doesn't want to identify himself as a criminal. And of course, the movie is there to prove him very, very wrong.
He has to communicate a lot without saying a lot of words, which I assume is very challenging to a young actor.
I think Ansel really rose to the challenge. I think one of the things about it is that you see the character in different walks of life. So the way he acts with the rest of the gang is he goes very taciturn and doesn't speak that much. And that's partly trying to show some sort of inner strength, and it's partly just a way of like not engaging, that these guys are basically all like sort of sociopaths and psychos, that by actually sitting in the back and not saying much is one way to get through the day without kind of, you know, invoking any extra aggression. And then when he's with his foster father, who he lives with, his foster father is deaf, so then he's signing, and it's only really...
Does he do real signing?
It was a deaf actor. C.J. Jones, who plays Joe, his foster father, is a deaf stand-up comedian. So it was an amazing thing to work with a real deaf actor, because, you know, in a lot of movies you have people who act as pretending to be deaf, and once I'd auditioned C.J. Jones, I just couldn't see anybody pretending to be deaf, so it was important. And I guess the third thing is that when he meets Lily James, who plays Deborah, then he starts to come out of his shell.
The waitress he falls in love with.
Yes, because she sort of asks him questions that he sort of force him to start sort of talking. So you see him in different kind of modes, and you see him sort of starting to come out of his shell.
My guess is Edgar Wright, who has written and directed Baby Driver, which opens in theaters around town today. Let's talk about the initial bank robbery. We don't really hear it. We hear what Baby hears, and everything is set to tempo, even the windshield wipers. That must have required an incredible amount of choreography.
Yeah, it's sort of several different stages of meticulous prep, basically. Starting with the script is like writing the song into the script and breaking down the song, and on the script page, which is a very sort of complicated thing to do, is describing what's happening in the action that you see and also what's describing what you hear in the song. Then we did storyboards, and then we edited the storyboards to the music to see if it all timed out.
Did you have a choreographer?
Yeah, so then the next part of it would be to bring in like a choreographer and the camera department and the stunt department, and then it's really like a collaboration between everybody there, where it's like I could sort of map out what I thought it was, like that song's 5 minutes long and here's what I think's happening in these different bits. But then you bring a choreographer on and they can really just flesh it out and bring it to life.
In the scene when Baby is going to pick up coffee after the heist, each movement is perfectly timed to the beat of the song. So that required more preparation.
Yes.
Did it require a lot of rehearsal?
Yes, that's shot. That is the one set to Harlem Shuffle. And it's a scene where it's immediately after the first car chase. You sort of establish that baby as like an amazing getaway driver, and then in the very next scene you see that he's also the gopher and has to go and get the coffees. So then you see it's the title sequence of the movie, which is a 3-minute uninterrupted Steadicam shot where Ansel is going to the coffee shop and back, all set to Harlem Shuffle. And lots of extras, lots of moving parts, lots of different things that are on the music. And that was also probably, like, Ryan Heffernan, the choreographer, probably his biggest scene in the whole movie. Obviously, there's choreography all the way through the movie, but that's one of the most complicated bits. And it was the first day of the shoot.
And should I assume that Anselm Elgort was a good driver before he started doing this? Because he has a real, he has a lot of complicated scenes involving expert driving.
Well, I think he lives in New York, so I think he would be, prior to the movie, he'd been a New York driver. And I think actually going out to California and doing some of the stunt training where you can actually get out into some space and start pulling some J-turns and stuff, like he learned a lot of new tricks for sure.
We should talk about some of the other cast members. Kevin Spacey is the mastermind of the gang. Did it take much convincing of him to take the role?
You know what? That was something where it came together so fast, and it was like sort of a really pleasant shock, because Kevin had previously not been available when we were trying to get the movie together. I think he was trying to mount the play, which he's actually doing right now, and he was going to do this play, so but then it got kind of like moved to this year. So
this suddenly, is after his TV commitment?
Yeah, exactly. And the play that he was doing, the Clarence Darrow thing right now, I think he was trying to do it last year. Anyway, basically what happened is that suddenly it was like, what about Kevin Spacey to play Doc? And I was like, well, Kevin Spacey's amazing, of course. And it's like, Kevin Spacey reads the script. The next day I'm flying to Baltimore to the House of Cards set, have brunch with Kevin. The next day he's signed on to do the movie.
So and John Hamm is doing something very different from the Don Draper role. Jamie Foxx seems to revel in playing the ultimate sociopath.
Well, it's great to see Jamie play sort of genuinely bad, because I think sort of like you've seen Jamie be like an incredibly strong character in, you know, Django Unchained. But to see him have so much fun being a complete psychopath. And also, what's great about John and Jamie and Kevin is they're all great dramatic actors, but they're all very funny, or they have a sense of humor. And in this movie, a lot of times when there's like moments of dry humor, it's usually lulling you into a false sense of security that something very bad is going to happen in a second.
We mentioned Lily James, who's probably best known from Disney's Cinderella. But one of the more difficult roles must have been Isaac Gonzalez trying to shoot guns while in very high heels.
She actually also did this thing where, and I tried to dissuade her from it, but she was very insistent on having the two biggest machine guns that she could. And I was saying, are you sure you want to have these two? Because they're really heavy. And she goes, no, I can do it for sure. And I found out later, she told me afterwards, that she had actually super glued the machine guns to her gloves, which I didn't find out until afterwards, because I was really impressed, because I was watching her, and she's like, you know, she's a lot lighter than I am, and I was thinking, I'm not sure I could like sort of shoot those guns in one in each hand. And I found out later that she glued them to her gloves, which I thought was fascinating.
How did you develop the playlist? Did you want people to think of this as a heist movie or as a movie with a lot of music?
Well, I guess it's like a heist movie driven by music, so it's a bit of both. I mean, I think because, you know, I'm a big fan of that genre. And I've
So these like, are songs on your playlist?
Yeah, all the songs in the movie are things that I like and listen to. So I have like an enormous collection of like tunes, and I was just finding stuff that I wanted to hear in a movie.
Including Bell Bottoms by the John Spacer Blues Explosion for the key car chase.
That's the opening chase, and that song is one, yeah, that basically inspired the movie.
So what, do you already have another project in the works? Would it be here or in Canada or in the UK?
That is a very good question that I don't have a great answer to at the moment. I've been so in the world of Baby Driver that I like sort of just, I'm a terrible multitasker, so I'm just about to come out the other side and figure out what to do next.
I was thinking the whole time about how difficult this film must have been for your editor, Paul Maklis, because he had to time everything the song.
We did a lot of it on set. One of the things that we did, which is kind of rare, is we edited on set a lot, because for that very reason is that we had all these songs, we were playing them in on set, everything had to be in time with the music. So one of the ways of doing that was actually to kind of like for Paul to be there, and so we could kind of literally keep things on track.
And I gather that there are some stunts in this film that have never been put into films before?
Well, there's some kind of trick driving in there that's pretty amazing. Jeremy Fry, who's like the main stunt driver and is like Ansel's driving double, because as you might imagine, there are some things that...
That's what I was asking about before. I couldn't believe that Ansel could do some of those
things. Could do some of them, but I think there's some things that the insurance people will not let you do.
I see.
So there's an incredible alley kind of trick shot that Jeremy Fry does, which is a 180 in, 180 out, which is amazing.
Did he have any dance experience before doing this film?
Oh, yeah. I think Ansel's actually background when he was a teenager was doing musical theater and ballet.
And how many songs are in the movie?
35.
Wow. Edgar Wright is the writer, director, and also the man who chose the music for Baby Driver, which opens today in theaters around town and also all around the world, you say?
All over North America and the UK and Ireland.
And thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Baby.